Welcome to the Father State. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all for being with me. You can support the Father State by becoming a member right there on the YouTube channel or locals.com. And don't forget, check out my coffee, Punchy's Coffee. I have my own coffee now. That's amazing. Go to jesseleepeterson.shop. jesseleepeterson.shop. I have with me Abby Johnson. She is a former Planned Parenthood director turned pro-activist. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jesse.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
We got a lot of stuff to cover, so we're going to move a little faster here. A little bit about you. You're a Christian.
Yes.
Married.
Yes.
And did I hear that you had eight children?
I do have eight children.
Eight children?
Yes.
You had them?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes.
You don't look like you had eight children.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
Thank you. Well, when I worked at Planned Parenthood, I had one child. And everyone at the clinic that I worked with really encouraged me to abort her.
Oh.
Yeah. They are not, you know, pro-family, of course.
Right.
You know, our country's largest abortion provider, of course, does not want their staff having children. And so they really encouraged me to have an abortion with her. But I was married to my husband at the time, and so we had her. And then I thought I didn't want to have any more children. And when I left Planned Parenthood, the Lord, you know, I got back into relationship with God and really felt him saying to me, trust me with all things, you know, including your children, the amount of children that you're going to have. And so my husband and I just really put our trust in him, and he expanded our family in tremendous ways. And so now we have eight children.
Well, we need more white babies.
We need more. Yeah, we're in a serious population decline right now. We have really declining population rates. We have a fertility crisis in the United States.
Yes.
And we definitely need more children. And we are in trouble.
When I heard that you had eight kids, it reminded me of the good old days. I had, some of them expired now, but I had seven sisters, five brothers at one time.
Wow.
And then I have one of my aunt, they had like 18 kids or something.
Wow. That's amazing.
Popping them out like not going north. And so we're going to get to the Planned Parenthood thing. So you are a Christian. When you were working for Planned Parenthood, were you a Christian at the time?
No, I can't say I was a Christian then. You know, I was, so when I was eight, I came to the Lord. And I was raised in church. I'm raised to know the Lord. I remember the moment where I felt the Lord calling me when I was 8 years old. I, you know, got out of the pew. My parents had no idea what I was doing. It'd be the first of many things that I shocked my parents with. And walked out, you know, walked down the aisle, that middle aisle, gave my heart to the Lord, made a public profession of faith. And, you know, I lived that way for many years. Walked with the Lord, lived for the Lord. But, you know, I'm 45 years old, and I think at the time, it was just a time where it was different. You know, we didn't have social media, and
right.
The truth came from really two places. It came from the Bible, and it came from Encyclopedia Britannica. I mean, that was kind of the two places, right?
Amazing.
We didn't have the internet. We didn't have all this, you know, your truth and my truth,
right.
And all this subjective moral relativity that we live in now. And we just didn't really talk about like difficult things like abortion or homosexuality. You know, it was kind of like, well, we're not going to run into those things because we live in this Christian worldview.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I went to church, I went to youth group, I, you know, did all of the Christian things. And then I went to college, and because we had never talked about those things in my home, and I don't fault my parents for that at all. It was just a different time.
No, those days, no one talked about it.
Yeah, nobody talked about it. And
I don't even know what I did is this, I guess, but no one talked about it.
No.
Yeah.
And so when I went to college, I came in contact with a woman who worked for Planned Parenthood because they are on college campuses.
Right.
They're ready and waiting for young kids. And she started talking to me about, you know, women's rights and feminism, and I knew nothing about any of it. And, you know, I was in a little bit of rebellion, I think, at that time in my life. You know, young kids go through that. And I just thought, okay, well, helping women, yeah, I want to help women. I'll do that. And I knew nothing about Margaret Sanger. I knew nothing about the founding of Planned Parenthood. I knew nothing about any of it. And so I just got involved very, just in the pure sense, like, ignorantly.
Right. I understand.
And went to work there. And I think, you know, it started at the very beginning of my time working there. You know, the Bible talks about that before you will be set life and death, and we are to choose life. But when you begin to choose death, when you begin to choose sin, I think there is a hardness that takes over your heart.
Absolutely.
And I continue to choose death. I continue to choose sin over and over again during my time at Planned Parenthood. And my heart just became so calloused, so hardened. And so it became easy to, you know, help women choose abortion. It became easy to become blind to what I was doing every day in the clinic.
And you were the director of it at the time.
Yes.
What did your parents say about you working for Planned Parenthood? Did they say anything to you about it?
So I'll tell you this. I always tell kids, if you grew up in a, you know, God-fearing home with God-fearing parents who are Christians, who taught you right from wrong, I always tell kids this. Never trust a decision that you would not tell your parents about.
Right.
When I went to work for Planned Parenthood, I did not tell my parents for a year and a half. I hid that from them. And that's how I knew that what I was doing was the wrong thing.
Absolutely.
Right? And so when I told my parents eventually, they were not happy. You know, they knew that Planned Parenthood equaled abortion. No matter how many times I said, no, no, we're doing other things. We're doing birth control. We're doing,
right,
you know, well woman exams. We're doing STDs. Like, they knew Planned Parenthood equals abortion. And they knew that was wrong. They did not like what I was doing. But they were so good. They didn't, like, nag me or anything about it. But every time they could get, every time there was an opportunity for them to say something about it, you know, they did.
Right.
But they did it with love. And I knew they were saying it because they were concerned for me.
Yeah. And do you believe that human beings are in a fallen state?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And for those
our culture is in a fallen state.
And what does that mean? For those who don't know what that means, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, we are in a fallen state right now because of sin. I mean, we have chosen death over life. We continue to choose death over life right now in our society. We see that in multiple ways. We see that through a breakdown of the natural family. We see that through the LGBT, LMNOP, community sort of taking over our society. We see that through the culture of death, through abortion, physician-assisted suicide, you know, single-parent homes. And we see that through the Lord Jesus Christ not being the center of our families today. And so I absolutely believe that we're living in a fallen state where people are not proclaiming Jesus Christ as Lord.
And how can one overcome the fallen state?
Well, I think we have to cling close to the Lord, and we have to raise our children to know the Lord. But I think that one of the things about you, Jesse, that was really convicting for me and something I'd never thought about was when you went on Dr. Phil, and you were talking about how we incentivize in our country single parenthood, and we don't incentivize the family. And that was something I never thought about. And it was something that really convicted me, even in the work that I do in the pro-life movement. because I started to think about how much even we in the pro-life movement incentivize single parenting, right? Even in the church, even in, you know, in Christianity, how we will incentivize single parenting. And it really made me think about how much we need to talk to these young women and these young men about marriage. And we're not talking about marriage.
And why is that?
I don't know, because I think we have convinced ourselves that, well, you know, if you make a baby together, we don't need to get married. That's not what that means. And I think that is one of the solutions. Yeah. Marriage is one of the solutions. If you have made a baby together, then you need to take responsibility together as a couple. I mean, I've been married for 20 years to my husband. It certainly has not always been easy. There have certainly been challenges, but marriage is not all about the feelings and, you know, the euphoric feeling and the happiness. It's about choosing to be married to that person.
When I was growing up, it was abnormal to have children out of wedlock.
Yes.
If a girl got pregnant out of wedlock, especially in the black area, she would have to leave town. And then we would ask, well, where is she? Oh, she went away. But, and she would come back with the baby, but no one knew she was pregnant. And when my mother got pregnant, she told my father that, my stepfather at the time, that she was pregnant. No, she told my father she was pregnant. And he was like, no, I can't make no baby. And so because it wasn't an embarrassment, she ended up marrying my stepfather before I was born, because it was an embarrassment to be pregnant out of wedlock. It was just known without even saying that a father and mother need to be together.
Right.
But you're right, they don't even talk about that anymore.
Well, because there is no stigma.
Yeah, right.
Surrounding it's being, you know, married or being pregnant outside of marriage.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's perfectly fine. And it's the same. There's no stigma around abortion.
Right.
There's no, that we have taken shame. We have separated shame from sin.
Yeah.
And it should not be that way. Shame should be, there should not be a separation between
Absolutely.
Sin and shame. We should feel ashamed
Absolutely.
For our sin.
Amazing. So being a Christian, do you have perfect peace?
I aim for perfect peace. I think that's my hope, right? Is that I have perfect peace in Christ. I think it's a work in progress. Certainly.
And so do you have it now?
I do.
You have perfect peace?
I do. I feel like I do.
And what is perfect peace?
I mean, I feel like I have, I feel like I do my best to walk in obedience to Christ. And we do that as a family. My husband and I do that. I mean, he is definitely the spiritual leader of our home. And so I do my best to follow his prompting and what he is, you know, he is listening to Christ. And so we are following, you know, him as he's leading our family.
You obey him?
I do.
You obey your husband?
I do.
That's rare, especially in nowadays generation. Is it difficult to obey him?
No.
Nice.
It is not, because he leads us well.
Right on.
And that actually gives me peace.
I bet.
That's what gives me peace.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always that way. When I worked at Planned Parenthood, our family was very disordered because they call for disorder, right?
Yeah.
They call for women to be the heads of their home.
Yeah.
They call for women to emasculate their husbands. They don't believe in natural marriage. The only marriage that is celebrated at Planned Parenthood, the only marriage that is celebrated inside of the abortion industry are gay marriages, truly. And so they try to break down the natural family. And there's something really, you know, truly, I've thought about this so much. I mean, abortion is, it's more than just bad or, you know, it's truly evil. I mean, it is demonic.
Yeah.
And it's human sacrifice. It's the same things that we see back in the Old Testament. The Bible says there's nothing new under the sun. And abortion is not new. this is the human sacrifice that we see in the Old Testament. It's just recreated, right, today.
That's amazing.
And so I remember, you know, my, I remember thinking, I think about this now, but I remember back then, there would be people in the clinic whose sexual act, because they're gay, because they're lesbian, their sexual act can never end in procreation, right? Telling a mother with life in her womb that she should destroy that life. That is so demonic and so perverse. But that is what is celebrated inside of the abortion industry.
Amazing.
And that's how you know it's evil.
How is it working in the in that abortion mill? How is it, how are they able to convince women to have an abortion? How they, what do they say that convince the woman that she can kill the baby in the womb? How are they able to do that?
Yeah, so they're very convincing. So if a woman comes in, for instance, and she says, you know, if she comes in and says, well, I think I have a plan. I think I could do it. You know, I think maybe I could make it work if I had this baby. Their goal is to wreck her plan. So these people, they're trained by Planned Parenthood, and this is how they're trained, okay? They're trained by all the training programs at Planned Parenthood, how to put her off track. So if a woman comes in and she says, you know, I think I'm going to keep this baby, they will say, oh, but, you know, daycare costs are so expensive. That guy's probably going to leave you. You know, he won't marry you. You're going to be a single mom. That's going to be so hard. You know, who's going to help you take care of this kid? Oh. You know, daycare costs are so expensive. All this kind of stuff. They will bring doubt and they bring fear into her mind. And they will try to convince her. I mean, you know, the enemy loves fear. And
definitely.
So he will try to confuse her and use her fear to convince her that she cannot be a mother to this child in her womb. And time is an enemy to the abortion industry. So they don't want her to sit and think about her decision. They want to get in there very quickly and convince her, you've had a positive pregnancy test, you cannot do this, let's get you an abortion appointment immediately, like same day if they can't. We're going to manipulate this crisis to get you on the table having an abortion or get these pills into your body so that you will kill your baby immediately.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I want to ask this first and then I'll come back to that. When you were working for them, you were married at the time?
I was.
And how did your husband feel about that at the time?
Yeah, he didn't like it, but like I said, our home was so disordered at the time. I had really emasculated him to the point where he did not have the authority in our home to, he had not taken the authority in our home to speak up and to say, this is wrong, you should not be doing that. And so one of the things we had to do when I left was really reorder our home.
Yeah.
And so that he could take that authority and that I could then submit to him and have that proper order restored in our home.
That's amazing, huh?
Yeah, it has been amazing.
Did you knew at the time you had emasculated him?
I did, yeah.
And what was that like, being married to a weak man?
Well, at the time, I thought, well, this is what I want. I mean, you know, at the time, I thought, this is what I want.
You're like, right on.
I want to wear the pants in this family, because that's what every woman that I worked with was telling me, that's what you do, that's what you want. And so that's what I thought, a home, like a home with a pro-abortion woman or what, I thought, this is what family is supposed to look like, you know? And I remember the first time after I left Planned Parenthood, I remember the first time he really stood in authority to me. And it was about the church. And I remember the first time he kind of like stood up and stood in that spiritual authority to me. And I remember thinking, it's really attractive. Like, I remember thinking that. And thinking, you know, I think I've had this wrong all along. And it completely changed the dynamic of our marriage. And it healed our marriage, actually.
Two things about the abortion. Have you ever seen any of the women that had the abortion right after it had happened and they were coming from the operating room or wherever they are? Could you tell then that they were sorry they had done it? Have you ever seen the face of any woman that right after the abortion she realized she was wrong?
All of them.
Or she felt bad about it?
All of them.
All of them?
I tell people, the saddest place in an abortion clinic is the recovery room. Every woman goes back to the recovery room. They are all sad. They are all crying. Every woman cries.
Really?
After an abortion.
About the abortion thing?
Every woman cries. I don't care if they have had 9 abortions. I don't care if they came in there, you know, flipping people off and saying, I can't wait to kill this baby. I don't care what they said on their way in. When they get back to the recovery room, every single one of them cries.
And why would they be sad? Why would they cry if they wanted it after 1 or 2 or 3?
I think it's just this realization of what they've done.
Oh, I see.
I think it's just a natural instinct takes over where they realize, oh my gosh, like I've done the most unnatural thing a woman can do to her child. And, you know, we in the industry gave them 15 minutes. They had 15 minutes to suck it up, right? We gave them a Kleenex, which is the universal sign for stop crying. And we said things to them like, well, just because something makes you cry doesn't mean it's not the right decision. Or we said things to them like that. And we gave them 15 minutes to suck it up and to steel themselves and to convince themselves that they made the right decision.
And knowing that they're going to be sorry about it, what make a woman come back again?
I think they convince themselves that, well, I think once you've sinned once, sin comes easier.
Yeah.
You know? Again and again. Because like I said, like your heart gets hardened. But I think also these women, we have convinced women that, and we've done this over decades, but we have convinced women that motherhood is slavery. Motherhood is akin to like being enslaved, being in bondage. Yeah. And being without children is freedom.
Yeah.
And so women are like, well, I'd rather be sad for a little bit, but in the end have my freedom, then be in bondage and be a mom for the rest of my life.
Amazing.
So they'll take the sadness, you know? They'll take the little bit of sad instead of being bound to a child the rest of their life.
Did you ever feel bad in that at the time that you were had encouraged a woman to do it? Did you ever feel bad about it?
Not at the time. I felt like I was doing the right thing. I felt like I was so blinded by the enemy. I did feel like I was doing the right thing. I felt like I was helping women. It wasn't until the last year that I was there. I was there for 8 years. It wasn't until the last year I was there that I really started wondering, like, what am I doing? What are we doing? Things had gotten so bad. And we were doing things that made me just question why we were doing them. But it wasn't until that last year when I really started to question what we were doing. And I did have some hesitation then. But up until that point, I was just so calloused to everything that was happening.
And I know that some women have abortion at the 6th month.
Yes.
Sometimes 8, and maybe even 9th month now. What's the latest you have seen happen?
So the latest in the United States that doctors will do abortions is actually up until the due date.
Oh.
So there are women having abortions literally up until the date of birth. And And a lot of people, even people watching the show, will say, well, they only do that if something's wrong with the mother or if something's wrong with the baby,
right?
That is 100% not true. Many, many research groups, including the Guttmacher Institute, which is the pro-choice, that is the abortion industry's research group, okay? So they would know better than anybody why women are having abortions in the third trimester. And they have found out that women are having abortions in the third trimester. They're having them at 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months. They're having them not because there's something wrong with the baby, not because there's something wrong with the mom. They're having them for the same reasons that women are having them in the first trimester, because they decided they don't have enough money, because their boyfriend walked out on them and they don't want to be a single parent. They are having them for the exact same reasons. These women are having abortions at 34 weeks, 35 weeks on healthy babies to healthy moms.
That's amazing. So at the ninth month, when they have the abortion and the baby comes out, the baby's like a full baby at that time.
Yes.
Do they see it? The woman that has the abortion, does she see the baby?
No.
They don't let them see it at all.
No.
Because they don't want them to see reality. That's amazing, huh?
Yeah.
Two other quick things. How do they convince the women that the father has no say-so in it? Because some of the father would keep the children.
Yes.
How do they convince the women don't let him have any say-so about it?
Well, I'll be honest, most men don't speak up because we're living in a society of very weak-minded men.
Yeah.
And most men don't say anything. So most men will say, well, you know, whatever she wants, or it's her body, you know?
Yeah.
But for the ones that do, for the rare group of men that do want to speak up and speak out, the abortion workers, the abortionists will say, well, it's not his body. It's your body. It's your baby.
Yeah.
You're the one that has to live with the consequences of this. So he doesn't get a say. And they will physically bar him from the facility. They will remove him physically from even being able to go into the clinic to talk to the woman that is carrying his child.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you know how women like for men to hold their hands while they're having the baby?
Yes.
That's something new too, but that's a different story. They don't allow the men to hold the woman's hand when she's having an abortion?
No. She is completely alone.
Yeah. What a mess.
It is a mess.
So have you seen, have you seen it happen?
Yes.
You saw the aborted baby coming out?
Yes.
What was that like, seeing that? What does that look like?
So after an abortion is done, all of the body parts go back to a lab called the POC lab. POC stands for Products of Conception, which is the baby. And there's a lab tech in that lab that takes all of the parts of the baby and reassembles them. And they make sure that that there's two arms, two legs, a head, and a torso. And
that's crazy.
It's terrible. It's disgusting. And that's that person's job. That's what they do all day. That's all they do. And it looks like... it looks like a human being. It just looks like a mutilated human being. And sometimes the babies come out alive. Sometimes they come out, you know, still breathing, heart still beating. And the abortion clinic will do whatever is necessary to complete that abortion. So if the baby is born alive, they will drown the baby. They will twist its neck. They will cut the back of the baby's spinal cord to kill it. They will just put it away in a closet and allow the baby to suffocate on its own lungs. Whatever is necessary to kill the baby, they will do whatever is necessary.
And they don't think of it as a human, as a person?
No.
So the person that put the body parts back together, they just have no sense of this is a human being?
Right.
Really? What killed their spirit that they don't see it as a human being?
I think it's just I think it's just sinfulness. I think, you know, it's like I said, I mean, I think once you start making those choices for death, once you start making those choices for wickedness, I think there's just a hardness of heart.
Well, it's just a job, huh?
It is. It just becomes
a factory job or anything.
It is. It's a factory of killing children.
That's amazing. Do you know Cecile Richards?
I did.
Oh, you knew her?
Yes.
Amazing. She used to be my boss.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
She was a stone cold woman.
You can say that again. She used to work for a union, a local union here in L.A.
Yeah.
And at first I was a union steward at the hospital.
Okay.
But I was so good at it, the union hired me. And she was my boss at the union.
Wow.
And so that's, I knew she, her husband, and their children.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing, yeah.
May her soul rest in peace.
Yes.
So let me ask. I noticed that there's this fight between abortion supporters and anti-abortion people, right? Pro-life and pro, what do you call it?
Pro-abortion.
Pro-abortion. What's the purpose of fighting with them, with the anti-life people? Why fight with them?
I don't know that my goal is really to fight with them. My goal is to really bring them to a place of conversion. I believe that most people who support abortion have a story surrounding abortion.
Yeah, of
course. Most of them have had abortions. They've supported someone that's had an abortion. Their mom had an abortion. I mean, like there's something surrounding abortion in their life. And I think there's a wound there. And so, you know, I don't want to win a debate and then lose that person's soul. I mean, my job, my goal, I think all of our goals should be to help bring people into eternal life with Christ. And so I'm not out here just trying to make people feel bad or not be an ambassador for Jesus Christ. That's what I want to be. And so I'm not trying to fight with people who believe abortion is right. I really want to know them. I want to hear their stories. I want to share my story. And I want them to understand why abortion is wrong. And I want them to come to a place of repentance.
Wow.
You know?
What's wrong? I mean, what does God say about abortions?
Well, God is very clear about life being sacred. You know, Psalms talks about how, you know, we have been knit together in our mother's wombs, you know, before our parents even knew, right, that we were created, that God knows us intimately. He knows every hair on our heads.
Right.
So we're not a mistake. No one is ever a mistake.
Right.
And that, you know, we are set apart from the moment of our conception. So it's not random. Nothing is random. Nothing is a mistake. And I think God is very clear about humanity and how he feels about men and women and the family. And so I don't think that there's, you know, any doubt that he wants to protect life in the womb, that he wants to protect the vulnerable, and, you know, that he will ask us what we did for the least of these. And certainly the least among us are those in the womb. They are the most vulnerable in our society today.
I noticed that God gave us life as a gift, right? Life is a gift from God, right? And I noticed that he doesn't seem to, it's like whatever you want to do with that life, that's unto you. He's not going to do anything about it unless you want help from him, of course. But he'll let you do whatever you want with your life because it's a gift from him. You can do what you want. You can live in misery, you can live in hell, or you can be free. And so I noticed that he doesn't stop people from having abortion.
Right.
Why is that?
So God gives us, you know, we can live in God's perfect will.
Right.
When we're living in obedience to him, when we are following his will, when we are, you know, when we are in relationship with him, right? When we're reading scripture, when we're attending church, when we're living in a body of believers, when we're praying every day, when we're truly living in relationship
right.
with him, we are living in his perfect will for our lives. But he also allows us to have permissive will, right? He also has his permissive will. And so we can make bad decisions when we're living outside of his perfect will. And he will allow us to do that. He's given us the gift.
I know, but that's the point is that he doesn't seem to be concerned about how we live it. If you want to go into darkness, he'll let you live in darkness, love evil, do whatever you want, kill babies and all that. And he won't do anything about it.
Right.
And, or if you want to be free and have perfect peace, he'll help you with that because you're asking for help.
Right.
And so why are we concerned about it? How somebody else lived their lives, whether it's killing babies or whatever life, right? Since it's a gift from God, God gave them the gift, why do we care what they do with their lives? If they decide to live that way, kill the babies or be in gay relationships or have polygamy or whatever, why do we care about it at all when he doesn't care?
Well, I think he does care. But
he lets you do it, though. He doesn't.
Yeah.
He and Jesus sit up there and party and have fun.
I think he does care. I think sin is an individual sin affects the entire community of believers. It affects the body of believers.
What do you mean by like everybody or just that one person?
No, I think it affects all of us. I mean, abortion affects all of us.
So, in what way?
So I'll give you an example. So we have aborted over 70 million babies
in the United States.
We've aborted over 70 million babies. So just from a financial perspective and economics perspective, we wouldn't be in an economic crisis when it comes to like Social Security and things like that if we hadn't had aborted over 70 million taxpayers. So abortion affects even us economically right now. So abortion affects all of us. I mean, look at how many people we are missing in our culture, in our country, in our world because of abortion. We're missing leaders, we're missing thought leaders, we're missing scientists, we're missing people who could have come up for many cures for different ailments. We're missing people who could have spoken into different people's lives and brought them to Christ. We could be missing the next Mother Teresa. We could be missing the next Jesse Peterson. We don't know. We could have be missing all these people because people chose to take their future into their own hands, to take themselves out of God's perfect will. And that, of course, matters. It matters to God, and it's our job as people who are sent out as Christians, as people who are to evangelize for Christ, to bring them back to Jesus, to bring them back into his perfect will.
But do you find it interesting that God doesn't seem to care? When I say care, he's not going to, and if he doesn't punish us when we do wrong. And so he'll just let you do wrong. And he only helps those who want help, who ask him to come in and help me. Other than that, do you find it interesting that he won't help you unless you completely ask for help? He'll let you live in the kind of way you want, and he won't judge you. He won't do anything, but just let you suffer. Do you find that interesting? Because he could stop it if he wanted to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he could.
He could, like, totally just stop it.
Yeah.
But I notice he doesn't do that. He only helped those who really invite him in for help.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. Yeah, it is interesting how he does that. I would say, too, that...
Have you ever thought about that? That God only helped those who asked him for help?
Yeah, I will say this, though. You know, when I was working at the clinic, I mean, when I gave my life to the Lord when I was 8 years old, And I, you know, I did in college and during that time at Planned Parenthood, like I had definitely walked away from God. But I had amazing people in my life. My parents were always praying for me. People outside of the clinic, you know, who were faithful prayer warriors, they were praying for me every day that I went to work. You know, my different family members, people that I knew were praying for me. And I think the power of that prayer is very important as well. I think the power of praying parents is more powerful than people realize. And so even, you know, when I was standing there in an abortion clinic, participating in an abortion, that was when God really opened my eyes to what was taking place in this clinic. And God came rushing in. I mean, like he met me at that moment on September 26, 2009, in the middle of an abortion clinic, in the middle of an abortion. Like he came into my heart, came flooding into my heart, you know, busted through that callus that had formed on my heart. And I was not standing there in that moment being like, oh my gosh, like God, help me, right? I was not doing that. But because he had claimed me as his on Easter Sunday, 1988, I was then one of his children. And I don't believe that God, once he claims you, I don't believe that God ever stops fighting for his children. And so because there were people praying for me, because there were intercessors, there were people praying for me, praying for my soul, praying that I would come back to the Lord, I think he was listening to those prayers. And I think he was always fighting for me. And so even though I was trying so hard to turn my back on him and I was trying to run from him, he did come back fighting for me. Like, you know, it wasn't like a still small voice in my ear like, Abby, don't you want to come back? Like, no. He came rushing back for me like a lion, right? Like a father, you know, coming back and saying, get back here, girl. Like, you need to come back to me.
How do when they pray for you, what did they say? What were they asked?
They asked for me to leave the abortion industry.
That's what they were telling God, asking God for you.
For me to wake up.
But how did they know to pray for that when we don't know what we want and we don't know what other people want? How did they know that that's what you wanted?
Well, that's not what I wanted.
I mean, to be away from there.
Well, that's not what I wanted at the time. But so, they knew that that was me working there, working in that evil place was against God's perfect will for me.
Oh, they saw it that way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. So at the time, were you a liberal or conservative?
Oh, yeah.
And so you were convinced in college, you went there a conservative, and you ended up becoming a liberal.
Yeah.
They convinced you that in college?
Yes.
That's amazing. I noticed that a lot of people leave home a Christian conservative person, but when they come back, you don't recognize them. They're a liberal. They have a different mindset and everything.
Blue hair.
What a mess. So you're not a preacher or anything, right?
No, I'm not. Okay. No, I don't believe in that.
So let me ask them some things about politics.
Okay.
And should Christians be involved in politics?
Definitely.
And why? Because there are a lot, do you know that there are Christians who think they should not be involved in politics? Why should they be involved?
I think the Bible tells us that we should be involved in politics. I think that's very clear, and I don't think we can separate the two. And I think, honestly, when we look at things like abortion, I think we've made a lot of things political that really aren't supposed to be political. You know, like abortion,
sure.
I think that's a human rights violation.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the LGBT movement, I don't know that that's necessarily political. I think that's, they're trying to destroy the natural family, which is God given.
The order of God.
Right.
I mentioned Cecile Richards. Mm-hmm. You knew Ann Richards too?
I didn't know Ann. I just knew Cecile.
Her mother. When she was working for the union, she seemed like a nice lady then. Somewhat, you know. It's like I was surprised she became the director of the whole Planned Parenthood thing there in Texas, at least, right? I was surprised to see that switch in her, that change. And so I wanted to interview her before to find out what made the change from work when she worked for the union to work for an abortion mill. Because I'm wondering, did that happen in college? I don't know what changed her mind. Because I never imagined her working for an abortion mill. And that's why I'm glad to talk to you to kind of understand what happens along the way. And so did your parents knew you were a liberal?
Yeah, they did. Well, I mean, yeah, eventually they figured it out.
Did they ever talk about that to you? Like, you're not raised to be that way. How you become a liberal?
They did, yeah. I mean, not in those words, but they did challenge me.
Okay.
On some of my beliefs, for sure. Yeah.
They and did. You would fight them on it?
I did, yeah.
That's amazing.
I was pretty stubborn, yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. Did you ever forgive your parents, your mother, for turning away from your father and try to control you?
Well, they didn't really try to control me. I would say they didn't try to control me. They were just very vocal, right?
Well, when you were growing up, you know how mothers try to control everybody, everything, and kind of when she turned the kids away from the father because you want to be the ruler. Did you forgive her for that?
Oh, no. I lived in a very well-ordered household.
Your father?
My father was the provider, yeah. He was a spiritual leader in our home, still is. You know, I grew up in church.
And so your mother, you never was angry at your mother about anything?
No.
She was perfect?
Yes, I really do have, like, perfect parents.
She made no mistakes at all, your mother?
No.
She made no mistakes?
No.
Amazing. Did you have to forgive your father?
No.
He was perfect as well?
Yeah.
You're the first.
I know. I have no, like, childhood trauma or anything. I have great parents.
What's your impression of the great white hope?
Well, I spoke for Donald Trump at the RNC in 2020. I mean, it's kind of funny. I think when a lot of people, liberals, will be on social media and there will be different things that will come up and, you know, they're like, did you vote for this? Is it this is what you voted for? And I think we're all kind of collectively like, yeah, actually, I think this is what we voted for.
That's right.
So,
and
yeah.
Are you okay? What do you think about the Iran conflict? What's going on with Iran right now and the Great White Hope?
You know, honestly, Jesse, I'm not an expert at that. Right. So I don't know a whole lot about it. But I trust that Trump has people in place that know what they're doing. I think that he has more than sufficiently led us over the past few years in international conflicts and international affairs. And so I trust his leadership in this situation
right
as
on.
Well. And I think that he certainly knows more than I do, right?
Absolutely.
So
people ask me about it. I'm like, I trust the president.
Yeah.
I'm having to wait and see about this thing. And so far, everything that he's done have always turned out to be amazing.
Right.
And people say, oh, he lost this time. They're going to get him this time. But it always turned out well. And so I'm just having to wait and see what the Iran thing.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, the gas price is going up. And the food price. I'm like, they were already up. Under Biden and Obama.
Right.
Nothing new happened with that, right?
Right.
And so I'm having to wait and see with this whole thing.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I mean, there's just a lot of things I don't understand about international conflicts, and
That's right.
That's just not my bag, you know? That's not
right
my
on.
Wheelhouse. But I know that I feel safer now.
Absolutely.
Than I did under the Biden administration. I feel safer now than I have under any Democratic administration. And so I just have to trust that.
I tell the people they should be saying thank you, Donald Trump, if anything. And I hear that people are turning against him because of that. But that's what human nature is. People turn against you. They love you as long as you agree with them and doing it exactly in their way. And the moment you deviate, they turn against you. So
Well, I think most people are like fair weather fans, right?
Absolutely.
So they're for you until you mess up one time.
I like that word, fair weather. I haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what's your stance with Israel? How do you feel about Israel and America supporting Israel?
So,
did you know that become a thing now?
Yeah, I know that's a thing. And again, like, I don't know, like, everything about all of that, you know. I think that it's okay for us as Americans to question different governments and to, I don't think we need to ever have just blind obedience to
right.
a country.
Yeah.
I think it's okay for us to question the various governments and still to say this land is holy and this land should be protected, but to also say, you know, where is our money going and
right.
and are we using this money in the best way possible? And are we giving it to the right things? And I think that's okay for us to question that and yeah. not just to have blind allegiance
of course.
Somewhere. But, you know, again, I think that I have to just kind of trust the people that are making those bigger decisions.
I heard some people claim that Netanyahu was controlling Donald Trump. And Netanyahu said himself, nobody controls Trump.
I don't think anybody can control Donald Trump. From what I understand, like, they can't even control him on, you know, social media.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're controlling him on foreign
right.
affairs.
So. The Democrats, and they wish they could control Donald Trump.
Yes.
That's all they've been trying to do is
right.
to control him.
Yeah.
No one can control him.
They can't control him behind a mic.
And
so.
That's amazing.
I don't think anybody's controlling him.
Yeah. So do you believe in the order of God?
What do you mean?
God and Christ, Christ over man over woman, women over children.
Yes.
You believe in that order?
I do, yes.
That's rare nowadays.
It is,
even a lot of Christians don't believe in that order anymore.
Right.
That's amazing, huh?
It is, and I find it gives you the most peace.
It does.
In your household.
Yeah.
When
perfect
you are living in that perfect order that
yeah.
Christ, you know, he instated that for us.
Yeah.
And when you live in that, when you rebel against that, I find that's when things become disordered.
It does.
In your life.
But
that's what, like, feminism has told women to do.
Yeah.
Feminism has told women to rebel against their husbands, to rebel against that natural order that God gave us for a reason. You know, he made Adam first. And he made us from Adam.
Absolutely.
And there's a reason for that.
Absolutely.
Right? And so we are to be a helpmate. We are to be a partner. And we are to be under, you know, spiritual submission.
Yeah.
And so I find that to be just the most beautiful type of marriage that you can have.
I don't even, when I was growing up, you used to hear preachers and others talk about that order of God, right? I rarely hear that now. It's like the preachers, not all of course, but a lot of people are afraid to talk about the order of God. And I know for a fact, and without a doubt, that what destroyed the black family is that they took the father away and they replaced him with government and false leaders
with
over
Medicaid.
The people. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
They
changed everything.
So they replaced the father with, particularly in the black families, they
yeah.
replaced low-income families, they replaced the father with Medicaid.
Absolutely.
And
that has become
the new form of slavery
yeah.
in the black family
yeah.
is being tied, being enslaved to the government dole, being enslaved to government assistance, which I think... Even in, you know, I see this in the pro-life movement. I see it in, you know, Christian churches where the first thing that we tell women to do is to get on Medicaid, get on SNAP food benefits,
yeah.
get on WIC, get on all these government programs. And I think that is something that we need to break even in the Christian community, in the pro-life community.
100%.
I do not want women. I mean, I run a ministry for women. And I'm like, that is not what I want us to be telling women. I do not want us to be telling women the first thing that they need to do is to become dependent on the government. We need to teach them how to become completely independent from government help. And but that's it's terrible even in Christian spaces as well.
It sure is. And they do it because they want to control the women to get the vote and all that. Because you give them something free, now they feel like they owe you something. They got to vote for you because you gave them free stuff. That's why they do it.
Yes.
That's why I've always said one of the worst things that ever happened to the blacks, other than abortion, was the so-called civil rights movement. It was the worst thing. It changed the family. Martin Luther King and Jesse Jackson, all those people set themselves up as leader of the blacks. They sold them over to the Democratic Party, and it's just been down here ever since. What a mess, huh?
Yeah, and you know what's crazy about Jesse Jackson, too, is that he used to be an ardent pro-life advocate. He used to be completely against abortion. And something changed in him. And he all of a sudden, like, became this big civil rights leader. And then all of a sudden, he decided he was for abortion.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know why that happens. I don't know why that, I mean, it's something, I guess, about the Democratic Party. They align themselves with the Democratic Party.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, they go from being a Christian to being a Democrat.
What a mess.
And if you're going to be a Democrat, you must support abortion.
I got to ask you this because of time. Do you have white privilege?
No, I don't believe in white privilege.
When you think about the people who say that white people have white privilege, and you even hear some white people saying they're not trying to appease the blacks, I have white privilege. What do you say about people when they say, you guys have white privilege?
I think that it is, quite honestly, I think it's an excuse for mediocrity.
Yeah.
I think that I have friends across many different ethnicities, and I think that we live in an age right now, in a time right now, where there is nothing that I can do that anyone else can't do.
That's right.
I think we are all equipped to be educated, to read the same books, to go to the same schools, to get the same jobs, if you put in the hard work. And I just think that we set ourselves up for failure when we start looking to other people and blaming them for the reasons why we have not succeeded.
A victim is the worst person on the planet. Ain't nothing worse than a victim, because victims only think about themselves. They never think about anyone else. You're right. What do you think about there's a genocide happening on white people in this country, as it is in South Africa to the whites and in white countries. What do you think about the genocide on white people in America? They always accuse white people of being racist. They knock them out. They rob them. They rape them. And it's barely reported or nearly never reported in the media for the most part, but not all the time. What do you think about the genocide on white people today?
I don't know. Why do you think that's happening?
Because white people won't speak up. They're afraid of being called racist and stuff. And people hate weak people.
Yeah. People don't want to speak out.
They're afraid to be called racist and all that or losing something. Does that concern you that white people are under attack in their own country?
It is concerning to me. You know, it's interesting. People like to kind of compare, like, the immigration from Ellis Island to the immigration of today. It's not the same because in Ellis Island, those people had to be European, right? They had to be white.
Yep.
And so to compare what happened in Ellis Island to the immigration catastrophe that we are having today could not be further comparable.
That's right.
It's not even true.
But white people won't speak up or explain that. No, that's not true. You compare that. They have nothing in common at all. White people won't say anything. Why not?
I think there is a fear. I think you're right. I think it is a fear. People don't want to speak up against I mean, any issue right now, I mean, it's like people don't want to speak up and say, you know, that's bad, what's happening in our country with, you know, all the transgender nonsense that's happening. You know, it's like, oh, well, you're going to be transphobic, right? Or we don't want to say we don't want, you know, gay teachers in our schools, right? We don't want... And they're like, oh, well, you're going to be, you know, labeled homophobic or whatever.
So why are people afraid to speak up about it?
We have to stop just being fearful, right?
Especially Christians, because in God there is no fear.
Right.
And so if a Christian has fear, they should question that. Okay, why do I have fear if I believe in God? In God there's no fear, so I shouldn't have fear. Why don't the Christians question that fact that they have fear?
Yeah. Well, we should.
Yeah.
But I mean, look at what happened with COVID. Everyone was so afraid.
I know.
I mean, we live in a society of fear that is being dictated by fear.
So I got to put you on the hot seat.
Yeah.
I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
Okay. Let's do it.
The hot seat.
Should white people be allowed to say the N-word?
I don't think anybody should say the N-word, no.
What is a woman?
An adult human female.
Do you keep hot sauce? Do you keep a bottle of hot sauce in your purse?
No.
Is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
Yes.
True or false? When she's crying, she's lying.
True.
Who would you rather see as president? Hillary Clinton, Michelle Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Melania Trump?
Oh, Melania Trump. Hands down.
Did you take the jab?
No.
Is the earth flat or round?
Round.
Is abortion worse than slavery?
No.
Do we need more white babies?
Yes.
Are aliens real?
No.
Have you ever told anyone how the cow ate the cabbage?
No. No. But I would like you to tell me.
Does a chicken have lips?
No.
True or false, sending your child to a public school is child abuse?
Yes.
Amazing. Did you have fun?
Yes. Yes.
Amazing.
This has been a dream. Honestly, this has been a dream. So.
Right on.
Yes.
Well, tell the folks how to get to your website or whatever you want to promote.
Yes. They can go to my website at abbyj.com. Okay. And my ministry is And Then There Were None, and they can go to abortionworker.com.
Abbyj.com mm-hmm. and abortionworkers.com?
Yes.
Amazing. Make sure y'all check it out. And thank you again for coming on. I appreciate it. And thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget you can support the Father's Day by becoming a member there on the YouTube channel or locals.com. And check out my coffee. It's amazing. Purchase coffee at jesseleepeterson.shop. Like, follow, ring the bell, and do all that good stuff. And you know, any other guests you'd like to see on the show, contact my producer. Producer@thefatherstate.tv. All right. One other thing, I do shout outs for you too. Birthday shout outs, weddings, congratulations, encouragement. Go to Cameo, cameo.com/Jesse Lee Peterson. Appreciate you. That was amazing. Thank you. Nice.